So while the presentation is being prepared, I can just start talking already, saving us some minutes, because it's always difficult when you talk about your favorite topic and only have 10 minutes. That's very difficult.
Yeah, here's but, the end of the
camera. Yeah, okay, all right.
And the black line.
Okay, good. Yeah. So what I'm talking about today is actually an example of how TCL is being actively used in the scientific community. Scientists typically are not IT people. They do something else like me, marine biology. But some of those know a bit of programming, and TCL is the perfect tool to do lots of very, very good stuff in a short time that is usable. And the example I brought today is a project I'm involved in with 20 partners around all Europe, also partners in Canada that is involved. And it's an EU-funded project. It's from the European Union under the Horizon Europe program. It's a four-year project, runs until 2026, and we are currently in the starting phase, more or less, but have achieved something already. So this project is called JEST for Seas. What does JEST for Seas mean? It's an acronym, of course. It stands for Achieving Good Environmental Status for Maintaining Ecosystem Services by Assessing Integrated Impacts of Cumulative Pressures. That's a long name. Probably doesn't make it much easier, but the picture will tell you all. So the thing is that the oceans are being used by humans in various ways. You have, for example, transportation here. Shipping, you have land-based activities, river runoff, you have tourism, leisure, fishing, energy production, all kinds of activities that lead to pressures like abrasion of the seafloor with fishing nets or pollution by stuff that runs through the rivers into the oceans. And all those different pressures act together in the ocean. And this is what this picture shows, that these individual pressures, they accumulate in the end, for example, here on the seafloor, and do some impact to the natural system that is living down there. And this is what we need to investigate when we want to understand what can we do to preserve the health of the ocean. And this environmental or good environmental status is one of the goals of the EU, that we want to have a good environmental status, a sustainable, healthy ocean that can serve the purpose that it's meant for. And one of the things is this ecosystem services. So ecosystem services, for example, is the oxygen that we are breathing. About half the oxygen on the Earth comes from the ocean. So if we treat the oceans badly, we'll not have enough oxygen. It's as simple as that, but it can become very, very complicated. And that's what we are dealing with here. So this more or less complicated figure shows what it is about. So we have human activities. They lead to pressures. They lead to changes in the ocean. And there's climate change on top, which evolves everywhere. And there's biodiversity, the plants and animals that are affected. And we have lots of programs in the EU that have the purpose to make the situation better. And on the other hand, there is economy that wants to exploit the ocean. So there's a large, complex picture of things that need to be taken account for when you look at what you can do. And what we're doing in this project is developing a toolbox, a software that tries to encompass all this and do an assessment of what is the health, what are the main problems, what can we do to improve it.
So pressure is mean physical pressure, so more...
It can be physical pressures, like putting some constructions on the seafloor. It can be chemical pressures in terms of pollutants. It can be different things.
So it's just stress for it.
Yes, yes. Stressors, so to say, yes. And what we do this with is we have learning sites, so-called learning sites all over Europe, which are areas where we have more or less good data on the actual situation in the oceans from various kinds of sources. And those are the input data to the software that we then evaluate in order to assess and to see what it is about. So now, what is the toolbox? First, some facts. It's a cross-platform application that we're developing. It runs on Windows and macOS currently. A Linux version is planned. It's not done yet because there's only one user in our 20 partner consortium that is using it, so that's not the main focus right now. On macOS, it's deployed as a typical Mac bundle, which is quite easy. And on Windows, we're doing it with the free web utility by Dennis Labelle. Currently, it is mainly purely TCL, and that's because we did the prototyping in TCL, and we tried to push it as far as possible to make it easy and quick running. So it's 14,100 lines of TCL code right now. And every time we hit a bottleneck where we see something is being too slow, then we can take that piece of code and exchange this with something that is faster. Maybe program it in C or look for packages that do the same thing, kind of, but just faster and better. And currently the packages we are using are SQLite 3, which is for the application database, so all the data that we have are stored there and handled there. Table list is, it's everywhere. So in all my apps at least, because I always need these for different GUI elements, and we'll see what that looks like. And there's OOXML, because we want to read Excel files. People, scientists in the environmental science often extensively work with Excel and want their files to be imported from that. So that is using TDOM under the hood. And UUID is another example from TCLib, because we have lots of metadata that we create, and we always need to specify a metadata set with a unique ID, and that's what this is used for. But there's a lot more. I can only scratch the surface in the time I have. So this is a screenshot of the macOS version. I only show the macOS version because it's much prettier than the Windows version. And what you see here is three parts. So here's a table list with a navigation. You can click on the different sections, and then the rest adjusts. In the middle, also a table list here with, in this case, the number of projects that is on the computer that is running the software. And this megabit table list is actually packed into another mega widget that I did that automatically adds some buttons here. So you can add new entries, delete ones, edit them, and in some cases also copy them to make a copy of the data set. And then here's an open space which shows what is inside if you click on those different entries. So that's either a canvas or a text widget, depending, or a table list widget, depending on the content that you have. And above the greenish one is also a text widget showing the metadata, or at least some of them. So you can have multiple projects, and if you open one of the projects, you get, for example, here the user data, which is highlighted here, and here is a set of user data from one of those learning sites. It's, I think, something like 40 different sets of so-called ecosystem components. And the one highlighted here is Place, which is a flatfish living on the seafloor. And if you know Europe a little bit, you see this is Denmark here and the Swedish coast here. So this is part of the Baltic Sea. And the colors here show you that the darker the colors, the more fish are there in terms of this one single species. So this is kind of the distribution of different species on the seafloor or in the open waters. And we can import and export those spatial data sets from various GIS formats, from geographic information systems, and handle them in here to work with them. And on top of that, also other kind of thematic data sets, which I can't go into here. So what we're doing with them, we assess them. So we can take something and make kind of a workflow out of this. This is a canvas here, and you have some boxes that you can move around and connect to each other. And what you do is that you define some kind of data blocks, which are data in terms of a specific topic. So the ecosystem components data sets that you saw here would go into that box. The pressures I talked about in the beginning would go into that box, and then there are sensitivities, because not every ecosystem component is equally sensitive to a specific pressure. And those you can put into here by some definitions that you're doing, and then they feed into that black box here, which is actually really a black box. There's a lot of algorithms behind there that does the actual processing, the actual assessment. And these are kind of templates that the users can build graphically, because we want that software to be easily handleable also by competent authorities that are not scientists, but they still want to assess with the data they have. So it must be as easy as possible for them to use that software. So it's kind of a graphical modeler that you see in mind mapping software, for example. It's a bit like that. So if you have such a box and define it, this is how it could look like. You get a window where you need to specify what is the name of the block. Is it an action? Is it a data block? And how is it defined? And you define it in terms of the metadata that are associated to the data sets. So this is here where you define. It's kind of a filter where you have those large numbers of data sets, and you only want to see those that have a specific metadata set for them. And these are all kind of mega bridges that we built, not for this project, but that evolved in many, many years in our company and that we use for different projects. So this is a known package that we were developing. We called it Toolworks, or I called it that way, kind of 10, 20 years ago when I started this, and this name kind of stuck. And this is a sample code of how that particular window is coming. So to make it very, very easy, we just have that form, say it should not be a dialogue, dialogue zero, it has a path, and I suppress the OK and cancel buttons, and then I just add things here. I add an entry, a radio group, and a combo box, and a query, and make it very simple to kind of build these kind of custom windows where you can enter data just by specifying what you want to have and all the other stuff, putting the widgets in place, doing the layout on the widget is done automatically for you. So that makes it very easy to build such complex windows like this one here. And if you, from the user point of view, work with it, you click on that box and you can click on this edit buttons, and then you get that window and you can just choose what you want to have. So it's all made as easy as possible for the users. And these templates are then kind of assessment templates that you then can run on your specific data, and from that you get a result. And one of the results is shown here. So this is a result of a typical so-called cumulative impact score analysis, and the output is again a map here. And what you see here is again the same area, and all those dark spots here are probably shipping routes, because in this case shipping was one of the pressures assessed against birds. So what effect has shipping on birds? And of course, where birds and shipping coincides spatially, there's something going on, and the blacker the pixel, the larger is the impact on those bird species. What we needed here is, of course, spatial data sets, and spatial data sets are difficult to read. There are so many of them, and there is this GDEL package, which is known in the world of geographic information systems. It's used in mostly every geospatial software that you use, being it R or QGIS or whatever. And there once was a binding to TCL, which was the output of a Google Code of Summer project 2009, but it's very, very outdated. It doesn't really run, it has no documentation, and I think it was done using SWG, so it's just a translation of the API to some kind of way that we can use it for. So what we did, we handcrafted a TCL binding for that, where it's possible, just say GDEL info and then supply a file name. In this case, it's a GeoPackage file, which is a SQLite container having spatial data inside. And then you pick a layer sediment type, and then it gives you the information extracted from that file. So it gives you the bounding box in terms of the geographical coordinates, what kind of data it is inside, what is the maximum value of the data inside, which geographical coordinate system is it, and so on. And the next step then would be to read that in. So I say GDEL read, supply the exact same information, and then it just reads that data into a long list where each pixel in your spatial map is one value. And this is something that we then can work on in the project. And the next thing we want to do is, of course, to write the file back to those file formats, to export them also, and to do coordinate transformations and all kinds of stuff that you would need when you are working with spatial data. So just the last thing, to give you an example, an idea of what is going on here. So imagine you have three different ecosystem components. Say it's birds, fish, and mammals, for example. And you see here a representation of some area of the ocean and everywhere where you have a cell that is black means that species is present, and when it's white, it's not present. So you have the spatial distribution of your ecosystem components. And then you have pressures, the same. This could be shipping, this could be fishing, this could be pollution by some chemicals, for example. And what we do in a typical impact analysis is we combine those. Every ecosystem components combined with every pressure gives one map, and then we add these maps on top of each other, do some specific calculations with them to accumulate the effects that could come from them, and you get a result. And a typical example would be that we have the learning site I showed has 625 by 756 cells, and each cell is 500 by 500 meters, covering the whole geographical area. So it's in total 472,500 cells. We have 51 ecosystem components, 41 pressures, making 2,091 combinations, every ecosystem component combined with every pressure. And this times those 472,000 cells means that we have nearly 1 billion individual calculations for this single map that you saw, the resulting map. And on a recent Mac Mini, it takes about 2.5 minutes, which is not bad, but of course for most scientists, they don't want to wait 2.5 minutes. And this is only the beginning. Having larger data sets, smaller cell sizes, more complicated calculations, uncertainty calculations on top, bootstrapping, all kinds of things that we want to add in, that will mean that you will probably wait for hours to get a result. And this is of course then the bottleneck. So the prototype needs to evolve into something that we can cut down this time. And one thing is, of course, then to find where the massive workings are going on and re-implement that, for example, in C. There are packages around that can do it. For example, Vectical is one of those packages that we're looking into that could do the speed of up the calculations very easily. There's just one problem. Vectical cannot operate with no data values. And this is typical for what we have. We have our grid of cell sizes, and in some cells we know where the species are, how abundant they are. But in other cells, we don't know nothing. We don't even know whether the species exists there. And Vectical cannot operate on a list or vector of data where some elements are empty, because this is unknown. So this is a problem that we need to work with. We want to embed TCL and also R as scripting languages inside the toolbox so that you can make these assessment templates, customize them by using own scripts to make it extensible. And the packages that we are developing here for the GDEL binding, we want to release as open source as soon as we have them finished in a way. It's a beast to compile if you want to have this. So GDEL is having something like 12 to 50 dependencies, depending on which data formats you want to read. It can read JPEG, shapefiles, GeoPackage, TIFF files, and I think we are supporting roughly 100 file formats right now, and there are probably a bit more. This is really a huge thing that is a 50 megabyte package in the end when you include all those dependencies. And the toolbox package, we also want to release as open source, so this could be a good addition if you want to have custom mega widgets. And I could only show you one of those examples. There are many, many more. So this is what we're doing, and I think it's a very, very nice application of what TCL is capable of doing in quite a short time. This is 1 year of development, and we have still 3 years to go to finish all that. And I can't wait to bring the toolbox to TCL 9, so get it out of the door. Thank you.
Are there any questions?
Andreas? A very quick question. You mentioned the black box at the beginning. Is that one also written in Ticker, or is it some other native code?
No, it's also written in TCL. Yeah, yeah. And the idea is to expose that to the users in the next phases so they can edit it and change the procedure to their needs, for example.
Reinhard?
I've got a question about portability. What are the OS-specific things that keep you from just copying it over to Linux and run it there?
There are none. It's just time. I just need a week to compile all the different GDEL dependencies, for example, to pull it all together, to put it into a script that makes an automatic build process from this. It just takes time for me, time that I don't have right now.
Thorsten, just two remarks. Vectical, in its current version, does not run with Tickle 9. Mm-hmm. And GIDAL and all its dependencies are part of build automation with Tickle.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that's something to explore. Thank you. Yeah, maybe it makes it much easier because I really had a hard time resolving all these dependencies and building it.
Maybe a small comment. I mean, since you have a data which is spatially separated and the quadrants you have are quite independent from each other, mm-hmm. it should be quite easy to parallelize it.
Yes.
You have different paths there. Mm-hmm. I think if you think about speeding it up,
yeah.
it would be the biggest chance.
Yeah, that's true. That's the low-hanging fruit that we will try, that we put it into different threads, do it into fractions. But the problem is that right now they are independent of each other. But the plan is to connect those. So if you have a pressure going on in one cell, it has an effect on the neighboring cells, on the neighboring area. If you have pollution going on in an area, this has an effect on the neighboring areas, although it's not the source of the pollution there. So that is something that we need to take care of, that we don't lose that capability in the end.
We can be vitally
advantageous. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Torsten Berg.
Yeah, thank you.